And the court will proceed to the fourth case of the day, Rizzo versus Smith. Mr. Rose.
Good morning. Thank you, and good morning, and members of this court and opposing counsel. My name is Terry Rose. I'm from Kenosha, and I'm a member of the firm Rose & Rose Attorneys. I represent Joseph Rizzo, the appellant in this case. Mr. Rizzo was sentenced after being convicted in Kenosha of some 62 years incarceration. He was in his late 50s at that time. He's in his late 60s at this time, having served approximately 10 years incarceration. He was convicted of, under Wisconsin law, of second-degree sexual assault, three counts, repeated acts of sexual assault, and intimidation of a victim with the threat of force. The accuser in this case was a 14-year-old teenager who happened to be a neighbor of Mr. Rizzo's. His trial counsel appealed that case to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals granted a new trial. The state appealed to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They reversed. They sent the matter back to the trial court for analysis on the issue of whether or not the defendant Rizzo was entitled to a psychological examination under the case of State versus Mayday. The trial court said no. The trial court also rendered the opinion that there was no violation of a case called State versus Jensen, that this expert opinion that was rendered indicating that the conduct of a particular victim was consistent with that conduct of a sexual assault victim, that there was no violation there either. That matter was appealed to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. They affirmed, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court did not take the case again. But trial counsel then sought the writ of habeas corpus in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, denied that, issued a certificate of appealability as to the two issues that are before this court, having denied the writ.
Kind of an interesting alignment here with the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, that the first time when it was set aside, two of the three judges participated in the case again when the finding of Judge Fisher.
I quite agree.
Different author to the.
I can't explain it. I concur that in that what you've said. I think there are two basic issues that I want to argue and focus my attention on this morning before this court, and those are the two that the district court said certificate of appealability should be granted. One is this very key witness, Dr. Pusey, who was the therapist of the accuser, teenage 14-year-old. These sexual assault cases, as we all know, generally speaking, there are no witnesses. Defendant denies it. The victim says it happened. Rarely are you going to find some independent witness on that. So the therapist's testimony in a situation like this is particularly important.
But you did have this, that's a summary of Dr. Pusey's actions with this girl. Included a lot of, it looks like a lot of cross-examination material, all kinds of things to amateur credibility, I would assume. Were you entitled to that summary? I know the state gave it to you.
Our position is yes, and we believe and would argue to this court that this is the denial of the right to confront one's accusers. It is true that the defense received a six-page summary of Dr. Pusey's notes. If this were a police detective, any other witness on the stand who had used a document to prepare and refresh one's recollection for testimony in court, I think it is quite clear that one would have to, under Wisconsin law, turn those papers over to the opposing counsel, and you could take a look at those notes and say, well, doctor, didn't you say on such and such an occasion, or didn't the witness say, the accuser say, whatever.
But you did have, the judge had an in-camera examination of those notes.
He had an in-camera examination, but that was for the determination of was there anything exculpatory. And I would say that determining something whether is exculpatory is different than having the document yourself as a trial lawyer and using that document to impeach the credibility of the witness before you. And I think that the witness before you, Dr. Pusey, is particularly important because it bolsters the credibility here of the victim in this case.
Is he a fact witness or an expert witness?
He was, and this is, I think, the other very important point in connection with that, and that comes to the second argument, the Mayday case. He was represented by the prosecuting attorney at the beginning of the case, pretrial. Dr. Pusey will be a fact witness. Defense wanted to have the victim here examined independently by an expert for the defense. Trial judge said, no, you don't fall within the case of State versus Mayday, representation being on the part of the prosecutor that this is just going to be a fact witness. No opinions are going to be rendered. This is not an expert testimony. Motion denied. That was a misrepresentation by the prosecutor because when Dr. Pusey was on the stand, she was asked the opinion as to whether or not this conduct was consistent, this delayed reporting was consistent of the way victims of sexual assault act and respond. So I think what we have here are two basic denials. One, denial to confront your accusers. You don't have the notes of the witness who is testifying, who's refreshed the refreshed her recollection. You can't use those notes to impeach. You only have a sanitized version, a six-page summary, which has been presented. The trial judge, I don't believe, is in the position of determining the trial of the case from the perspective of trial counsel who would make that decision as to what is important from the primary notes as to what is important on cross-examination or not from a credibility perspective. And secondly, you have the misrepresentation on the part of the prosecutor when the prosecutor clearly said the doctor will only be a fact witness, no opinions would have been rendered. Had the
was there any objection to the rendering of the opinion?
He did. Yes, trial counsel did object at both times during trial, as well as at the beginning of the case. But at the beginning of the case, I would agree. Probably not an independent independent examination by a defense expert would have been granted in light of the prosecutor's representation here. And I don't think if you read the record and you look at the prosecutor's direct question of the witness, this was well thought out and well responded to by the witness. This is not fair play. This is what I think was emphasized by trial counsel at the trial level and also at the appellate level in the state courts. It's not a level playing field. And that's what State versus Mayday was all about. We're going to have a level playing field here. If the state is going to have an expert who's going to render an opinion for after a personal examination, you too, defense, have that right. But that was circumvented in this case by the prosecutor, who clearly made a misrepresentation to the trial court to the state's advantage and to the defense disadvantage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Ms. Mueller.
I'm Marguerite Mueller, representing the state of Wisconsin. This court cannot lose sight of the fact that this case is here under the AEDPA, and that to prevail on either of the two issues for which the district court granted a certificate of appealability, Mr. Rizzo needs to identify a United States Supreme Court case that stands for the legal propositions he is advancing. On the first issue, the only U.S. Supreme Court case that Mr. Rizzo cited in his brief to this court was Pennsylvania versus Ritchie. But in that case, the Supreme Court of the United States merely held that Ritchie was entitled to an in-camera review of records in the possession of a state agency that involved his daughter, who was the sexual assault victim in that case. Now, assuming for the moment that Ritchie even applies to records that are not in the possession of a state agency, and we do not concede that, but this court need not tackle that issue, because even if you make that assumption, Rizzo got exactly what he was entitled to get under Pennsylvania versus Ritchie. That is, Judge Fisher conducted an in-camera review of Dr. Pusey's treatment records of DF, the victim in this case, prior to trial. And Judge Fisher found that there was nothing even remotely exculpatory in those records. In addition, Rizzo received a 6-page, very detailed summary of Dr. Pusey's treatment records of DF, a copy of which is attached to our brief. And as Judge Evans pointed out, there was a lot of material in that 6-page summary that could have proved very good fodder for cross-examining Dr. Pusey and for examining the victim in the case, DF. And when the...
Was Dr. Pusey a fact witness or an expert?
She was primarily a fact witness because she had been DF's treating therapist before the allegations against Rizzo ever surfaced. So she was not one of these experts who was hired by the state in anticipation of trial. Rather, she had been retained by the family to treat their daughter. And,
I'm sorry, was the only opinion that she offered the opinion about late reporting of these
sorts
of things?
That's correct.
Other than that, she didn't offer any other opinion.
That's correct. She was a fact witness on every point of her testimony but for the opinion she offered as to why somebody in the victim's position would wait a year before reporting something like this. And she gave various...
She didn't testify why DF waited that long. How generally...
Correct. It was more global. It was they could be embarrassed, they might be threatened. But it is true that some of the things she pointed out were also applicable to DF. So the jury could have drawn that inference. But she never specifically said, this is why this particular victim probably did not report right away. So under Pennsylvania versus Ritchie, Mr. Rizzo got exactly what he was entitled to, and that was this in-camera review of the treatment records that Dr. Pusey had prepared. And Judge Fisher actually revisited that issue during the course of trial after Dr. Pusey gave the opinion on delayed reporting and said, I still don't see anything in these records that is anything different than what you already have in the 6-page treatment summary. And there's really nothing in Pennsylvania versus Ritchie that says that a defendant is allowed to obtain access, disclosure of otherwise privileged treatment records of a victim for the purpose of aiding the defendant in cross-examining that victim's therapist, who happens in this case to be a fact witness, because she is one of the people to whom the victim confided that Rizzo had been sexually molesting her. So on the first issue, I don't think that Rizzo has satisfied his burden under the AEDPA to show that the decision of the Wisconsin Supreme Court was contrary to or an unreasonable application of any Supreme Court precedent. On the second issue, which is whether Rizzo was entitled to have DF submit to an independent psychological examination, Rizzo never identified in his brief to this court any United States Supreme Court case that would stand for the proposition that a criminal defendant can, as a matter of due process, force a complainant, a sexual assault complainant, to submit to a psychological examination. The only two cases Rizzo cited in his brief are two cases of the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, one which involves civil discovery, and State versus Mayday, which was very factually distinct from the situation in this case, in that there the state had specifically gone out and hired, I believe it was maybe four experts in anticipation of trial to examine the sexual assault complainants. But in any event, Mayday is not the law that governs under the AEDPA. Rizzo has to point to some United States Supreme Court decision that stands for the proposition that he is asking this court to adopt, and he did not do so in his brief, and he did not file a reply brief, and I think on that basis alone, this court can deny him relief on the second issue for which a certificate of appealability was granted. So unless the court has any questions, the state would rest on the brief it filed.
Thank you, Ms. Mueller.
Thank you.
Rose.
Can I ask how much time I have left here?
You have a minute.
Oh, okay.
If you need two, you can have two.
Thank you. I will be brief in any event. Let me deal first with the Ritchie case argument. First, exculpatory evidence is not what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is that we have a right to confront the accusers, the right to confront the witnesses before the court, and I think it's particularly important to distinguish between a state agency's records, which Ritchie deals with, versus the record of a private witness, therapist in private practice who comes to court to testify on behalf of a position advocated by the state of Wisconsin. That, I think, is particularly important. These are the records of Dr. Pusey, who has prepared for trial, who is now testifying, who has prepared a six-page summary, which seems to me to be somewhat of a concession on the part of the state. They seem to be saying that, well, that six-page summary is good enough, it's adequate enough. I say, well, why not the real thing? Counsel says, well, the trial judge looked at this in camera. It's not exculpatory, but the trial judge is not trial counsel, and I don't think is in a position to decide what from the real thing will be an effective method of confronting that witness in court. The argument about privileged records, it seems to me, that was a clever thing on the part of the prosecutor to say, wait, you can't see have that. That's privilege. That, to me, is trying to have it both ways. But when a witness goes on the stand to testify what was said in the therapy, that privilege is waived. I don't think that that's an issue here whatsoever. The clear precedent here is not the Ritchie case, but the right of confrontation cases, which I've cited in my brief. With respect to the the psychological examination issue, it is true there is no United States Supreme Court that procedurally says that a defendant can have a victim examined by a doctor or therapist. I quite agree. That is a procedural issue. But you can't divorce that from the fact that there was a prosecutorial misconduct in misrepresenting the issue to the trial judge. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Thank you, Ms. Mueller. The case is taken under advisement.